Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Human Technology Podcast. In one of the last episodes, I talked about a LinkedIn post that, to my own surprise, went viral. That was a LinkedIn post about Chinese cars on European roads. Another post that I posted a couple of days later also went viral. Not as much as the one on the Chinese cars, but almost as much. And for whatever reason, that was a bit under my radar. But at the end, it generated 10 times more views than usual and about 20 times more comments on this one. It was on shared mobility. So I had this post on shared mobility and it went viral. Again, if something like this happens, this is an indicator for me that my followership, my followers are triggered by this, and this is the chance then to make a podcast episode out of this. And I don't know how many of you saw this post, read it, so that we all have the same base, that we all stand on the same ground. I will read it out to you. So here is the post. The future of cities doesn't have room for private cars. There's no vision of the city of the future without shared mobility. Private car ownership will be the exception, not the norm. If we want to reduce the space consumption, the resource use, and the physical presence of mobility devices, we must rethink mobility, shared, flexible, and smart. That's why the sale of Freenow by BMW and Mercedes to the US-based Lyft company is so telling. What started as a bold move ends as a symbol of missed opportunities. The German car makers had the right idea, but lacked a clear strategy. No long-term vision, no deep understanding of platform dynamics, user behavior, or urban mobility needs. One thing is clear, shared mobility only works if the offering truly delivers. Intuitive, reliable, affordable, and well integrated into everyday life. It's all about how to, hashtag, make technology sexy. That's where it often failed. And perhaps people simply aren't ready yet to give up a long-established habit like owning a car. Hardware and software alone is not enough. We need vision, courage to change, and a deep understanding of human needs. What's your take? Is shared mobility in Germany on the verge of a comeback or on its way out? Looking forward to your thoughts and a great discussion. So far, the post, the original post that I sent out, I received 100 something, almost 200 comments on this one. They range from 100% agree, I couldn't agree more, totally my understanding, or we must fully establish car sharing, there's no compromise on this one. And then there were also some, you communist, you're a communist, that's expropriation, you're stealing ownership, you're stealing mobility. which is definitely wrong. I never said that I'm doing something on this one, but yeah, and these comments, not surprisingly, came mostly out of the US, where everything that is not right wing is suspected to be communist. I am not a communist, not at all, far away from this. But people have their belief, and I mean, that's social media, right? So I don't care about this one. I don't see it as a storm. But anyway, those were the reactions. LinkedIn posts are short, they're focused, and I admit that I try to be provocative every now and then. A podcast, on the other hand, offers more room for nuances, for analysis, for details. So what I plan in this episode today is a generic look at the current situation, the history of present of car sharing services, what is the status, and where do we come from, and how can we move forward? What can we do to make the next step into the right direction? Let's have a look at the current situation. The resource consumption by cars, by private car ownership, is obvious. When I look out of my office window here, I can see a lot of room on the streets, space on the streets, reserved for cars. Just to drop cars there, they're just standing around there. They're not doing what they're supposed to do, driving around, but they're standing there. It's ubiquitous. Almost every street here in the city where I live has parking places. So my neighbors, they have two on their front porch, on their front garden. It's ubiquitous. We have parking lots. We make underground constructions which are highly expensive just to park cars. And it's even worse when you travel in the U.S., when I remember traveling in Michigan, in the greater Detroit area, when you drive there through, I don't know, Novi or Farmington Hills, there sometimes you have the feeling that there is a parking lot of the size of three or four football fields, and then somewhere at the horizon there is a couple of shops, and then all these totally empty parking areas, these asphalt areas, they're reserved for parking cars, for leaving cars that are not doing their job. So we have these enormous infrastructure, and they eat up a lot of space. Streets and highways also take up space, and they provide danger. And it's the noise pollution that you have. It's totally ubiquitous. It's omnipresent wherever you are. There is noise created by cars. Cars kill people. Yeah. On a global basis, 1.2 million people are killed in traffic every year, annually. One example, the Charlottenburg Castle in Berlin, it's a pretty famous site, is surrounded by main streets. And there was a bridge, and this bridge was closed to cars due to construction. And suddenly, when I walked there, I found out, hey, the level of aggression that I feel, the level of threat of danger totally dropped. That was almost close to zero because there were no cars. And cars are used only about 5% of their lifetime. That's the average time, 1 hour per day, maybe 2 hours per day. So 90%, 95% of their lifetime, cars are just standing somewhere. Yeah, they just sit around and they take space, attention, money, focus. As a side note, somebody told me, yes, but doorbells are used even less, maybe 0.0001% of their lifetime. That's true. But they blend smoothly into homes, and they don't consume mental, physical, spatial resources as much as cars do them. So I don't care that the doorbell is hardly ever used. Yeah, but I care that cars are hardly ever used, because cars occupy our cities, the space we live in, our minds, and our brains. So car sharing is seen as a solution. And since different models of car sharing are existing, I will describe six of them. Six car sharing fleets, six ways of car sharing that exist. Number one, free floating fleets. Free floating fleets means that you have an app and you see, oh, there is a car. I need a car. Yeah, you find this out, and then you go to the app and you see, oh, there's a car about 100 meters, 300 feet away from me. I'm going to reserve this one. You get to the car, you drive the car from A, where you enter the car, to B, where your destination is. You drop the car there, you lock it with the app, and that's it. Now, free-floating fleets. And within a certain area, there you can drive freely, and you can pick them up wherever you want, and you can drop them wherever you want. So in Germany, you have the services Miles and Share now. There are different ones in other countries with different names, sometimes owned by the same companies. Usually it's rental car companies or car makers owning them. But that is a free-floating service. And that is supposed to replace private cars. Something I can imagine that you say, okay, I live in downtown Berlin. I live in Manhattan in New York. And I use usually public transport and my bicycle. And every now and then, if it's raining or if I have to transport something, I need a car. And you can use one of these free-floating cars, one of the cars out of the free-floating fleets. Second one is the station-based rentals. Basically the same like the free-floating fleets, but you have certain locations where you can pick up the car and other locations, certain locations where you drop the car. So it's not really free-floating. It is station-based. One example in Germany is Stadtmobil. There are others, again, other names, other brand names, other companies providing that in other cities. I see this as an expansion of the classic rental car models. You usually use the station-based rentals if you rent it for a day or 2 days. And instead of standing in long lines at a rental car company, you make something like a generic contract, and that allows you to pick up a car without all the paperwork and the long waiting lines. That's the idea behind station-based rentals. Number three, ride-hailing. Ride-hailing is like Uber or Lyft. That is replacing and enhancing a taxi service. So there is a car with a driver, and this driver drives the car, and it picks you up where you are, and it takes you to where you want to go. It's basically like a taxi service, and that's called ride hailing. Very prominent, for example, in Las Vegas, where taxis are part of the transportation opportunities you have, but Uber and Lyft are growing rapidly. Number four is ride pooling. Ride pooling, as opposed to ride hailing, ride pooling is also a car with a driver, but it's a bigger car. Usually it's a minivan or a small bus. And that picks you up on a couple of locations and drops you at a couple of locations. And you can order this one, you can pre-order this one, and you're not alone in this car. You are with others that were picked up in other locations and that will be dropped off in other locations. So it may be that you are driven around quite a lot. Maybe you have a direct of 1 kilometer, one mile to drive. But at the end, you drive 3 miles on this car because the driver is picking up others and dropping others in other locations. But you have a certain control where you want to be picked up and where you want to be dropped. In Berlin, it's called Moja, or in Hamburg in Germany, there are other services like the shuttle car services in other cities. Number five is peer-to-peer sharing, P2P. That is that you allow others to use your car, usually your neighbors. You live in a certain neighborhood, and I try to find out in which city, but I haven't found it during the research of this for this episode. But there is a city in Australia where you can do this, sudden, near, close, larger city. You have this. And if you live there and you say, okay, I don't need my car today, so my neighbors can have it. And then you have some kind of app and you have some kind of paperwork, contract work that is done on the insurances and the allowances. And then, your neighbor can take your car and he knows, okay, I will need it tomorrow morning. And he will drop it then before tomorrow morning. That is a peer-to-peer sharing. The Chinese brand Link & Co, they are implementing this as part of the ownership model that they have. So they usually lease these cars. And if you have a Link & Co car, you can give this to other users if you don't need it. A peer-to-peer sharing model, as I described this. Downturn here is it works with Link & Co cars only. They're not, and now we're getting back to the other post that I made. It's a Chinese brand, and they're not very prominent in Germany. But at the end of the day, that's exactly a peer-to-peer that they implemented into their ownership models. Little private remark here. I honestly cannot imagine to give my car to others. Not that I want, don't want others to drive with that. I'm not that much into it. But it's a private space. There is my stuff in the car. Maybe there is a couple of empty bottles in there. There's my cables in there. Sometimes I carry something around in the trunk that is private. So I would have problems to make this right away. But there will be others out there that say, I don't care about this. Or my car is 100% clean. I don't have any private stuff in my car. All right, that's it. And number six, we talk about the different car sharing, ride sharing solutions. Of course, public transport. Public transport is some kind of car sharing. You sit in the same bus as others. You sit in the same train like others. And you share this space. You share this means of transportation. And it is very well established in many cities and many locations on the world. So I see this as part of some kind of car sharing. Let's have a quick look into the history with, I know, a very German focus. Car sharing in Germany started in the late 1980s in cities like Berlin and Bremen. Initially, ecologically motivated niche services supported by cooperatives, by associations. And it then gained larger traction with the introduction of smartphones and the general digitalization during the 2000s, 2010s. And this is another example of my hypothesis that I communicate to my students and any others that want to hear it or don't want to hear it. Technology never works as a standalone. Technology is always working in networks. So one technology alone is having hardly any value, and the real value is created if you combine technologies. And the combination of a car and a smartphone and a service and a great idea, the general digitization, that created the chance to have, for example, free-floating fleets, station-based rentals, ride-hailing, and others. Commercial providers like Car2Go by Daimler and DriveNow by BMW revolutionized the space with free-floating models, transitioning from an idea to a legitimate part of urban mobility. That was the original plan. Problem is, profitability is missing, scaling is missing, and user acceptance is missing. So the growth is limited. And yes, I know, I made a post a couple of months ago on the missing profitability of car sharing services. And then I received a pretty aggressive answer by a marketing lady from Miles, which is one of the big German car sharing companies. We are profitable. How can you write that car sharing is not profitable? I made a research and I found out, yes, in that specific quarter while I was writing that, Miles, for the first time ever, made a tiny profit after years and years of losses. So maybe we get into profitability step by step, but I have my doubts. Let's talk about user experience. You know, I'm a user experience UX guy, and let's talk about this one. Couple of challenges. Many providers suffer from a suboptimal user experience, frustrating users, hindering adoptions. It starts with a cumbersome registration, a long verification process, complex terms. I remember when I made my Car2Go, I was a chair now, one of these companies, I have an account and I needed to go to a specific rental car company. I think it was Sixt at that time. I had to go there and show my driving license, and then they had limited opening hours. And yeah, I had to find an office. I have here in Böbling, where I usually live, there is none. When I was in Berlin, there was one within walking distance of my apartment. I could go there, but I had to wait for 15 minutes. I had to show them my driving license, and it took them another 3 hours to fulfill my registrations to unlock the service to me. That is frustrating. Maybe it is better today. That's already a couple of years ago. Maybe it's better today. But in general, that is pretty cumbersome. Buggy, confusing apps is another one. The HMI of these apps is okay-ish at its best. Yeah, it's not really straightforward, not easy to use. Plus the fact that there are technological bugs very often in this, and inaccurate vehicle data is provided. So this is not a very positive user experience. Then with the car, you may have on-site issues. There may be damage. There may be blocked. Maybe in an electric car, the cable is missing. You have malfunctioning of onboard systems. Or that's what I had, that the car is dirty. Now, that was my very, very first free-floating car-sharing rental that I ever did. It was a beautiful day in Berlin, and I decided that I want to have a car, and I opened the car, and then I saw that the carpet under the driving seat was dirty. Now, there was leaves on it, there was sand on it, there was gravel on it, so there was stuff on the carpet, on the floor. And my idea was, who touched the steering wheel before me? Who was sitting in this car before I entered it? And who was fucking into the seat before I got into it? And that is a pretty bad thing. And that was before the Corona pandemic. During the Corona pandemic, we all learned how viruses and bacteria are spread, and that car sharing car is a great opportunity for viruses and bacteria to gain some new bodies, some new humans as hosts. That is what we learned, and that is not making it easier for the car sharing company. And then I had this not with a car, but with a scooter I wanted to rent, that the vehicle just doesn't unlock. You cannot start the ride. Yeah, you started the rental. You know you're paying from right on, yeah? And then you just cannot start the car. And in that particular case, I was not even able to stop the rental. So I had to call the service center, and they had to stop it. And that is deeply frustrating in this one. For car sharing to compete with private car ownership, it must be simple, reliable, transparent, seamless. It must merge into my life. It must be easy to use and provide me a positive user experience. And many of the providers, not all, but many of them are quite far away from achieving this one. Next point, the economic situation. Some services restrict the operational areas. When I booked it for the first time, I had the idea. I was in Berlin Mitte, in my near my apartment. I rented the car and I wanted to drive to southwestern Berlin for a dinner. And I started driving, and I had the idea that I could return the car anywhere in Berlin, the entire city area of Berlin is. But I had to find out that the area of operation was limited to the inner part of Berlin. So there is a train ring around the inner city, and it was only inside this S-Bahn ring, the train ring, the public transport ring. It's only inside there. It's not outside. Then I was lucky that the restaurant where I had my dinner was close to that, so I could drop the car within the legal area and walk then the rest 10 minutes, the remaining 10 minutes, to the restaurant. Super frustrating. I mean, you can drive outside this area, but you cannot drop the cars. And imagine I would have driven some like 15 kilometers away from the operation area and then wanted to drop the car. I mean, it just isn't the kind of service that I expect. And my experience is that the rental car companies are limiting the areas of operation more and more. So this area where you can pick up and drop a car is getting smaller instead of larger. So definitely the wrong tendency that they have there. The acquisition of ShareNow by Lyft is a turning point. Germany loses a showcase project in shared mobility and a symbol of innovation in the automotive industry. Yeah, it began pretty well, but profitability is not there. There are strategic misalignments. There is a fierce competition. And I can understand this from a short-term point of view, that BMW and Mercedes said, no, we're going to stop this. We won't win company. Car sharing is a growth market. A few providers are profitable, but we have high fixed costs. We need to have the fleets. We need to buy the cars, to maintain it. We need to pay insurance, parking, all the IT backbones, the infrastructure. We have strong seasonal fluctuations, so bad weather may raise the use, bad weather may lower the use. The pandemic hurt a lot, there's fluctuations in that. The companies tend to withdraw from unprofitable cities. I can understand this, but this is not the right thing from a strategic point of view. And we have a pretty fragmented market. Well, we have ride-hailing services, we have micromobility, we have public transport, and all compete for the same users. And users want to have a multimodal transport opportunity, and we're not offering that one. Now, we do not have the integrated platforms, and so mobility remains fragmented. We have cultural barriers. Now, people are creatures of habits. We as humans, we have our habits, and although it gets more and more expensive to own a car in a city, many still stick to their private cars. They want to have it. And this may change in the future because latest studies show that young urban users tend towards car sharing. But we are far away from a real role that was one place. Scale is the key. We need more cars, more users, more cities, better efficiency. Very often we have regulation problems, parking costs, access to money. Only giants like Uber or Lyft can afford large investments. Others will have problems. And software is critical. So we are missing good booking systems, fleet management, charging infrastructure, apps. And every single part of that may work flawlessly, but we need to integrate this to get a complete overall experience. All right, so after analyzing today's situation and the history of it, let's have a look into the future. So future, usage of cars is caught between two extremes. One side, we have the private ownership. Private ownership as a symbol of freedom, independence, identity. Yeah, I am a BMW driver. I am a Porsche driver. Particularly here in Germany, the brand you drive is an indicator of your personality, of your wealth, of whatever you who you are. So that is one extreme that we have. The other one is the car-free or the private car ownership-free urban area with shared mobility, with public transport, with micromobility replacing the ownership, which makes it greener, quieter, more livable cities, less parking places, not so many resources that are eaten up. My view into the future is we will end up with something in between in the foreseeable time frame. So we will have some kind of compromise between these two extremes, private car ownership only and shared mobility only. Particularly in urban areas, we face regulations already. We have rising costs, and that will reduce private car ownership and support shared models. Totally different thing in rural areas where private cars will remain essential due to poor shared mobility infrastructure. All right, the key question is whether car ownerships, car sharing providers fill the emotional and practical gap, whether we create the right kind of user experience. And let's have a closer look at user experiences. What are the requirements that we shall fulfill? First one, simplicity and seamlessness. Fast, intuitive registration, one click, biometric, EID, whatever. Clear, minimal, self-explanatory app design. Just follow all the rules from Stephen Krug's Don't Make Me Think up to all the things that I'm teaching everywhere. Then you get a good and simple to use app. Reliability and transparency. Accurate real-time data. What cars are available where? What is their charging level? What is their location exactly? What is the gas level in the tank? And no unpleasant surprises. No broken, blocked cars. No empty cars. And a transparent pricing. Doesn't necessarily need to be really cheap. Yeah? I mean, car sharing will always be comparably expensive, somewhere between public transport and taxi. Yeah? But make it transparent. What will it cost me? Emotional connection and trust, brand building. Yeah? It must be more than a neutral service. I shall be an emotionally involved user of a specific app, of a specific brand, yeah? So including personalization, including maybe a community that you build up, all these things that create a positive user experience. Make users feel appreciated, yeah? With rewards, gamification, maybe even premium features. Yeah? You are a member of our service since 3 years now, and you will get this kind of thing. Daily life integration. I have a life, I have a job, and mobility is essential part of it, but it's not making me money. So at the end of the day, it must integrate seamlessly. And ideally, I have a multimodal, seamless transportation offer with public transport, with bikes, scooters, with rail, and then a shared car, maybe an Uber. All this integrated. And mobility as a service. One app, one ticket, one platform, one payment. And then at the very end, sustainability and meaning. Users want to make a positive impact, and the providers shall communicate clearly the advantage in the emissions that they have, CO2 emissions, carbon dioxide emissions, and whatever else emissions. All the savings that I have, the social benefits, the lower consumption of public roads, of the lower consumption of parking spots, and make users feel a welcomed part of the entire service. All right, that's it for today. It's a complex problem, the car sharing problem. We have these two extremes of car ownership and no car ownership. And it's a complex problem, and so it will require a complex answer. I have the theory that whenever there's a complex problem and you have a simple answer, the simple answer must be wrong. It cannot be right. And exactly the effect here, every simple answer will not meet all aspects that we have. And this way, yeah, let's look forward on how it works out in the next 5 to 10 years. That is a critical time frame. And as I said, we will end up with some kind of mix, with some kind of compromise. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.